Welcome to the Time Bubble Podcast, the only podcast out there where the guests get to travel in time. I'm your host, Jason Ayres, and this week I am very pleased to welcome Dave from Somerset, who describes himself as a Gulfstream enthusiast, which is another podcast we listen to. Dave worked in the energy industry for 24 years, and we have a couple of things in common because he is also a former DJ. And coincidentally enough, we discovered quite by chance about a year ago while we were on another podcast that we went to the same school. So welcome, Dave.
Hi, Jason. How you doing?
Pretty good. Yourself?
Not too bad. Little hay fever, as I think everybody is at the moment, but we shall battle through.
Yes, I had it terribly last week and must have sounded incredibly nasal on last week's episode. And it is very hot as we are recording on the summer solstice, in fact.
Summer solstice, exactly. And I am on a ley line, so...
You are. You're charged. You're not far away from Stonehenge, I would imagine, where you live.
Closer to like Glastonbury Tor and obviously Glastonbury Festival site.
So you're going to have about...
to me than a lot of people coming.
So I guess you're going to have about 250,000 people descending on you very shortly.
Yes, they come and buy up all the loo roll and all the bottled water.
Shocking. Just like COVID hoarders.
It is. I mean, it's probably the same sort of people. But I will be going as a local. You feel like you should go along because you can always come home, get some proper sleep. So it's good fun.
And you've got proper toilets at home.
That is actually priority number one. Well spotted.
Excellent. So this is quite a new podcast. So I'll quickly explain what we're going to do. It's based on concepts in my Time Bubble books, one of which in particular deals with giving people the opportunity to go back in time and relive past days of their lives. In the case of today, we're going to give you the opportunity to revisit 3 days from your past. They could be anything you like, and you could look at them and maybe decide whether you wanted to do anything differently or just enjoy a particular day again. So give us your first day.
I have so many things that I would change in the past that it's quite hard to whittle them down. I didn't even think about going back to a day that I enjoyed, because there's been quite a few of those too. But the first one goes to the school that we shared, and a certain teacher. Do you remember his nickname?
I guess you're referring to Captain Caveman.
Captain Caveman, yes. Who was rather like Captain Caveman. And I was about 14, and, you know, cheeky 14-year-old. And had been probably talking a little bit in class, but not a huge amount. But he slammed my head into the desk 3 or 4 times so hard I thought I'd crack my skull. And he probably gave me a concussion. And I did nothing about it. And this after going through some bullying at my previous school when I was little, and I'd fought back against those bullies, and then they stopped bullying me. And this teacher hit me so hard that I just, you know, I was scared to make a complaint because I didn't know what else he would then do. And you think, you know, how many other kids go through physical abuse at schools because people won't speak up against them?
Well, yes, I can certainly sympathize with that, because having attended the same school, which obviously we're not going to name, there were similar incidents that I recall from my own experience. There was a particular PE teacher there, which PE teachers often seem to be the worst, who I recall on one occasion, because I'd forgotten my PE kit, he did 2 things. Firstly, he threw a medicine ball incredibly hard and hit me in the stomach. And secondly, he came over to me and he literally lifted me up by my tie and suspended me in midair, which was almost like being hung, really. So not that, pleasant at
when
all.
Would that have been? That would have probably been early 1980s.
Yes, yeah, early 80s. Now, if I recall rightly, I was 2 years above you at school, and we didn't know each other, or we don't remember knowing each other. It's possible we may have, our paths may have crossed, but
I think both of us wanted to know as few people as possible at school from our time there. I never used to hang out with kids my own age or older or below. I used to go and always hang out with much more grown up people doing things outside of school, and I suspect you probably were the same.
Yeah, well, I never really felt that I fitted in there. I mean, I believe that you went to the school on the same basis that I did. It was a private school. So instantly you would think posh kids and Oxbridge. And there were a lot of kids like that at the school. We were there because we were just common or garden, you know, working class kids.
Geniuses.
From
the Commoner Garden geniuses.
Commoner Garden geniuses, yes. Okay. So I don't know, in your case, I was seen as being quite gifted as a child, particularly in mathematics. Looking at myself now, I have to wonder where it all went wrong. Perhaps it was going to that school. But they took in a number of local kids on assisted places.
Yeah.
And in hindsight, I mean, I know we're supposed to be talking about your day rather than mine. If I could have go back to being 11 and have the choice between going there and going to the local comprehensive, I think I probably would have fared better at the latter.
Yeah, I was kind of given that opportunity. My mum wanted to know if I wanted to go to the local comprehensive, because I started off getting brilliant grades because I was basically two years ahead of class. I'd already done 13 plus by the time I was 11.
Yes, so, we were prodigies.
Yeah. I mean, almost, you know, almost. I mean, not those top end kids, you know, getting degrees when they're 11, but I was certainly more advanced than the others there. So it meant that I didn't learn from the ages of 11 to 13. I just knew everything already. Now you would think top end school where parents, obviously not ours, but other parents are paying, what, 10, 15 grand, was it a term?
Yeah.
I think these days. Would have,
I would imagine, yeah,
the capability to nurture that talent and develop it. And they didn't. And I suspect they do now. I suspect after about our year left, when there was a lot of kind of trouble and precociousness, and I guess it's just that decade of the 80s of how children changed. I think it has undergone a big transition because it has girls there now. There's a lot of money been put into the facilities, which we didn't have, you know. Yeah, beautiful part of Oxford, but it was actually a real dump, wasn't it?
Yeah,
you know,
I mean,
people think of top public schools, you think of Eton and Harrow and all these glamorous places, and it ain't that.
That old teaching block was absolutely horrible, wasn't it?
Yeah. My mother was kind of working in London a lot, and I'm a single parent, single child, and I was going through a lot of stuff herself. And you could see my grades falling away, and asked me if I wanted to join the local comprehensive instead. And I said no, because I was getting so much grief from kids in the village, because they thought I was a rich kid because I had the school uniform from the posh school.
By that time, yeah,
you're kind of damned if you do and damned if you don't. So
I had that exact experience. So at the school, to the posh kids, I was a country bumpkin. To all the kids in my village, small village, I became quite alienated, and they didn't like the fact that I was going to this school. And I do remember speaking to my dad about it, and he was saying, oh, well, they're just jealous because you're going to a better school than they are. And I didn't see it that way at all. They had no desire to do anything like that.
No,
I was effectively being othered because I wasn't like them. Yeah. Yeah. And it was a very difficult few years. I mean, I don't know how it worked out for you in the end. Perhaps you might want to explain. But when I had done my O levels, and that shows a difference in age, because I'm thinking you'll be GCSEs.
First year GCSEs.
I went to the local College of Further Education, Oxpens, as it was known, to do my A-levels. And those were probably the best 2 years of my life. I had such a good time there. And there were girls.
Those things.
how did you fare in the long term?
Well, I was basically looking after myself at home. And I was told I did three O-levels a year early and passed those, which they told me I wasn't going to pass. And then they told me I was going to fail all the GCSEs. And I passed seven or eight that I took. But then they wouldn't let me do the subjects I wanted to do at A-level. And, you know, I'd got through pretty much by intuition without doing any studying. So hitting A-levels, back when A-levels were still an actual exam.
Yeah.
I really struggled. I really struggled. But I was hardly engaged with the school process. I'd stopped playing. I was in the cricket first 11 from pretty much under 14s onward. And I dropped out of the cricket and I was just not interested in school. So I failed all those, knew I was going to fail them. And I went to a retake school in the centre of Oxford where they had proper teachers. And it was quite expensive. But, by that time, my mother had developed a career so she could start actually paying for my education. And probably with a bit of guilt because of her absence. And they gave me a test. They gave me a maths test. They're like, you've got to do maths. Forget the chemistry. Forget the, I thought Latin and French as well and become a lawyer as well. But so I did maths in like 10 weeks and then was getting 100% in all the mock exams. And then I did further maths in 10 weeks and was getting 100% in all those mock exams in physics. And I walked straight A's and ended up at Imperial. But then once I got to Imperial, again, they don't care about teaching. It's an institution. If you're naturally gifted, you can make use of it and get into the kind of postgrad stuff. But I found London too much of a curiosity and got completely sidetracked away from studies. I again managed to bluff my way through a couple of years at Imperial before getting married at a very early age. So, that school, we both had issues with it. It's probably a lot better now. But what the main point is, I should have stood up to the bully. I'd done it once with kids my own age, but then when it's a grown up and you don't really know who to turn to, and I hate bullying. And that's why what is going on in our society and we don't want to talk about politics, but what is going on in our society is a lot of bullying from institutions and from radical parties and radical demonstrators, and they're just trying to pressure you into this kind of
totally agree. And with the support of the media the
and
politicians
it's bullying
as well.
So
do as we say, think as we say, or be cancelled. So not good. Okay, what have you got for your second day?
Again, it's a negative one, I'm afraid, because
that's fine.
I would love, and I sit here and I think about all the things that have gone wrong through life and how I could change them. Of course, by changing these things, you miss out on all the good things that they generated.
True. But I think there can't be a person alive that doesn't think in that way, which is why I wrote the book Midlife Crisis that this is based on, because the main protagonist in that does go back and he does fix a couple of things. And one of them was getting revenge on his boss for treating him badly. So we've all got those people in the past that we would like to go back and revisit. So crack on.
Yeah. So the second one is a work related one. And I had spent 10 years at one big energy company and I kind of got bullied/forced out of that job, but I wanted to go anyway. I was just waiting for a payoff and I used the money to go traveling around the world for 2 years. So I have no complaints over that. They were just trying to play the games and not give me the money. But I was too shrewd for them, that was never going to happen. But when I came back from traveling, I got a job with an investment bank. And again, for the we won't name it.
Okay, yeah.
I think you probably prefer that. But I was like, I'd done a really hard 6 months of getting some business set up for them in the energy side of things. And by having a smooth startup of quite complicated energy stuff with power stations, we've got a lot of external investment. And I thought things were going great. And I was doing some day-ahead trading when I suddenly get a tap on the shoulder. And it's like, can you come to the office? And I'm thinking, yeah, sure. And I'm thinking they're going to give you some kind of promotion and thank me for getting everything up and running. And can you take over this part of it? You know, it's like promotion. Instead,
well, it would be nice to think that way. But my experience, whenever somebody says, can I have a word with you in my office? It never ends well. No, continue.
And they're like, yeah, someone's made a complaint against you for bullying and harassment when you were in the bar the other night. Oh, my, just absolutely got gut punched, stunned. And of course, they've spent a week preparing this document with one person's point of view. And they give you 24 hours to reply. So you want to do.
They spring it on you with no warning.
Yeah, and you have 24 hours. Now, the incident was in a bar, and the guy was kept jabbing me in the chest. Said, we really need you engaged in this. And I'm like, look, you know, I'm here. I'm working, I'm doing 18-hour days. I'm doing 7 days a week. I don't know what you're talking about. And he was so aggressive in my face, and a well-known to have a big-time drinking problem. That one of the bar staff actually came over and was like, are you okay? Do you need? And I'm a big guy, and this guy's a little guy. And she was like, are you okay? Do you want me to get security? What's wrong with this guy? And I was like, no, it's fine. It's fine. We work together, you know. And in the end, I was like, you know, you guys are just parasites. You're feeding off the work that I'm doing. Just leave me the hell alone. I'm going to get it done. And I walked away. And then, so he has then accused me of bullying him and harassment and calling him this name.
Sounds like it was the other way round to me.
Well, exactly. And this was in a bar right next to the office. And I'm 99% certain they would have had videotape of it. But I go to the next day I'm walking past it thinking, I should go in and I should ask the manager, have you got a video of our altercation? You know, no fisticuffs or anything. It was just a heated debate. So that I can present it. And I didn't go in and ask, thinking that, again, justice would play itself out. And of course, they took his word over mine. And they could have quite easily gone to the bar and asked for a copy of this themselves. And they didn't want to. And this I can't remember what they gave me. Like went straight to a final warning, straight to a written final warning.
That's outrageous.
Yeah.
Yes, I think.
And considering this is in the city and quite a top in AAA rated investment bank, I should have sued them. You know, I should have got the facts and I should have sued them. And, you know, the next year was utter misery at that job. Just every little meeting went on behind my back. I wasn't involved in any of the interesting projects. I was working ridiculous hours, 7 days a week, looking after these power stations with no support. And then after a year of that, they let me go. They promised me like 100% salary as a bonus for getting everything set up. And they gave me 10K. Which was not not close to it, considering the hours and effort you put in. And I let them off the hook. I just thought, you know, if I just play the good soldier, let it all pass, then it's all gonna work out. And it clearly didn't. And I won it out. But I had a very difficult 2 years after I left there. I couldn't work in the industry for 6 months. You sign that in your contract because of the information that you know. And I really hit the bottle hard, and it affected my confidence in business and what I was doing in London and a lot of things, and just left me drifting through what should have been, you know, getting involved in this amazing project, getting it set up, but then escalating into helping them with other things, and instead of that, in the prime of your career, you get absolutely shafted. So I wish, like God, again, that I'd fought for myself. And challenged the bully, both the person who accused me, who got let go 6 months later, ironically enough, for being drunk. The whole, they found out how much work I was doing once they let me go, and no one was actually doing it. And it was quite embarrassing for them because it cost them a lot of money and the power stations were not very happy. But yes, again, it's a matter of standing up for yourself.
And again, I can empathize with that. I worked for a large market research company for about 15 years, some good, some bad, but you can be going along quite nicely, and then if somebody takes a dislike to you and wants to stop you getting promoted or generally wants to tarnish your reputation, it's not difficult for them to do it, particularly if they are your manager. And I had a succession of managers over that 15 years, probably at least 10 to 12 different ones. And there was one in particular that I remember who was constantly trying to find ways to discipline me. So I recall one occasion when she accused me of going home an hour early, which I had.
What a crime.
I know. But it was, she was like, I was looking for you, and half past four on Friday and you weren't here, so you went home early, didn't you? Nobody saw you, and it simply wasn't true. And it was quite similar to your story. I got on quite well with the security guard downstairs, and we used to swipe in and out of the building with a card, and it recorded what time you came in and you left. So I went down to him and got him to just literally print off the times I'd gone in and out of the building that past week. And it turned out that on that day in question, I'd left sort of 15 minutes after the official closing time. So that was an example where I was able.
How was the apology?
There was no apology. It was resentment for having caught her out, leading on to, her trying something else on, and that was really unpleasant. I suppose I did kind of stick up for myself, but not as much as I should have done. And I think what we perhaps both of us have in common on both these stories is that we were a lot younger then than we are now, and I think when you're young, you do not necessarily have that confidence, particularly if it's someone older than you and more senior than you. I'm at the point now where I would imagine I'm self-employed, but I'd probably be unemployable because I just wouldn't put up with anything.
I'd be unemployable if I had to work in an office still, but because I can work from home and I have to go in every 2 months, I just about get away with it because I get to bite my tongue.
Yeah.
There's no one directly there for me to say something.
See, I think I would just have to call stuff out.
The irony of the situation with me at that bank was that we were getting, this is about 2013, so like a lot of the woke lecturing was starting.
Yes.
And we were getting courses about bullying and harassment, what to do and how to go to HR. And I was thinking, if I go to HR, they ain't going to be on my side. Guys are trying to build a case against me. How the hell am I going to go to HR? All you're going to do is use the information I've given you to find another way to screw me over.
They always go with the side of the manager.
Of course.
So if your manager...
Unless you end up in court, in which case...
Yeah.
But, I don't have £2 million to spend to fight a two-year battle for constructive dismissal. So
yeah, and it's not even... It's not even if you win, the actual stress of going through that process... It's just not worth it.
Yeah, so, and you'll never work again in that industry.
Yeah, because you'll be blacklisted. So, exactly. We're definitely getting a theme here, aren't we? That we do need to stand up for ourselves as people more, but the system is stacked against you, and it's not easy. But I think you have to do it. So, okay. Well, let's move on then. We've done two days from your life, so we'll go on to the third one. Where else would you go and possibly change?
So the third one, when I used to DJ, I was married to a Croatian girl, and I used to DJ a lot in Croatia in the summer, a little bit in the winter, and I was pretty good. I could throw some tunes around and get people going. And
yeah, I can imagine that.
I was warming up for a very famous DJ called Jeff Mills, and he was coming on after me. And I'd been practicing with three decks at home, but I'd never played out on three decks. And I didn't feel the nervousness. And this was actually the last year that I played over there. I played one more party that, and then I found that the commercial changer. This is back in about 2001, 2002. And it was all starting to get really commercial over there. I didn't like it. But I get there. And I've kind of, in the past, always had a fairly solid start. I knew exactly the first few tracks I was going to play. And I'd never had an issue with headphones or sound monitors. Anyway, there's about 5,000 people there. And Croatian TV is there. And a whole bunch of journalists, because they're there for Jeff Mills. And I put the headphones in and I can't hear anything. Which, as you know, as a DJ, it's not a great start.
Yeah.
And the monitors were absolutely terrible. And then there I was trying to play with this completely new set. And I couldn't, with three decks, and I just could not hear the beats clearly. I couldn't, and it must have sounded absolutely terrible. And I just couldn't play. I could hardly play. So I had to really kind of strim it down. I had to borrow some headphones. But you start off in such a panic because things haven't gone right from the start. And by like the last hour of it, I kind of settled down. But as they say in the and there was an 8 Mile and Eminem, like you only get one chance to make a shot. You know, yeah. Kind of, you got 10 minutes to, and you have your big opportunity. And I feel if I'd smashed that there, then potentially I could have like really continued the DJ career.
Yes.
And then I would have kind of got into the studio and done dance music production, which I never did, which is a huge regret. And I look now, it's almost too late. It's so easy to do now that you feel like you're starting way behind and doing stuff that's already been done anyway. And I wish that I'd just gone kind of, I can't hear this right. There's something not right. You know, I'm not happy with this.
Yeah.
Check it yourself. And then just kind of played my normal stuff rather than trying to be clever first time out at such a major thing. You know, it was a huge mistake.
Yeah, I see.
On the other hand, you know, I kind of, it was also around the time I was starting to work, get a proper job, and I'd moved out of the shared house into our own flat and kind of moving away from being that young person in a shared house around the club scene. Maybe it was just a good moment of like, you know, it's not meant to be. And I played the next night in a different venue with a different style. And it was fine. Everything went absolutely smoothly and I had a great night. And that was the last time I played in the club. And I've just focused on my career in the energy industry after it. It's, you know, those sliding door moments of, is it going to happen for you, isn't it?
Well, life is full of those moments. I mean, I was a DJ, not on the scale that you were for several years, but I was largely doing things like weddings and such like. And I had my fair share of DJing disasters, but thankfully not on national television.
And they kind of came up to me after and were like, that was a really interesting style. And I'm like, not my style. It was an absolute nightmare. I just kind of like the guys who knew me, they weren't organizing the party, but they were part of the scene. And the next day when I played properly, they were like, oh, so you do remember how to mix. That's good. Cool. You know, like, yeah, thanks guys. But, I've seen some of the best DJs in the world have absolute horror shows. It happens.
It does happen.
Yeah. Especially when back in the old day with vinyl, you know, nowadays.
Yeah.
Forget about it.
But well, it's vinyl, still software now, isn't it? Wrong.
Yeah.
Yeah. How did you end up DJing in Croatia in the first place, out of interest?
Well, as I say, my ex-wife is Croatian.
I lived in a
shared house with a club promoter
and
a couple of other guys who were DJs, and just kind of was involved in part of the London underground techno scene. Not the hard acid kind of really underground stuff. Kind of Detroit techno side. And then my housemate got in contact with, you know, some people in Europe to try and spread out, and he was doing a party there, and he's like, yeah, you know, why don't you come over? And then it was also first time that I've been to Croatia to meet my in-laws, because they hadn't been over. That was in 1998. I haven't got married in 96. It was very exciting, you know, Croatia back then. It was,
there was no
English people going back yet. There was a lot of Romanians and Czechs and Hungarians going for the holidays, but it was only a couple of years after the war had finished. So
it
was a lot of underground parties and very open and chilled. And by 2001 and 2002, you know, the corporate money had moved in. Now it's completely different scene. But beautiful part of the world. I miss a lot more than the wife. So.
Okay, well, we've got a few minutes left. And at this point, I've normally got a couple of bonus questions. And we talked about this a bit beforehand. And the questions are, if you could fill anyone's shoes from past or present, who would that be? And also, if you could go any place or time in time, where would that be? And when we spoke earlier, you kind of wanted to combine the answers to these two questions. What have you got for us?
Yeah, I mean, when I was a kid, I always thought I'd want to be the knight in shining armor in the, you know, my sword flashing, you know, Dungeons and Dragons and all that stuff. But, you know, when you get older, you realize how sordid medieval times probably were. But no, having been in the energy industry and having studied mathematical physics, I would like to be the person who comes up cheap, renewable energy, as in nuclear fusion, rather than renewable energy we're stuck with at the moment. And ideally, to be that person in around 1960 on the west coast of America.
Wow.
Because it used to be probably the most beautiful piece of real estate on the planet. I've been lucky enough to go to California many times.
I have been, but only once, but I do have good memories.
Manhattan Beach in LA particularly, which is absolutely gorgeous. Yeah. And it would be just around kind of, you know, that time in America where everyone's driving beautiful Corvettes, Cadillacs and open tops.
Yeah.
And you've got the Beach Boys are about to start. You've got just a really kind of positive energy in life. An exciting time without, you know, where people had come out of the war and things were fresh and new and everything was possible. If you could avoid being trapped by oil, petrol, natural gas by having unlimited energy, you'd avoid the oil crisis, you'd avoid dependence on the Middle East, you'd avoid the whole green BS that we have to put up with now and the climate scam, because none of that, I mean, you couldn't blame. What would they blame? I suppose they'd find something else, because they always find something else. You know, they found COVID to double up on the climate fraud.
Yeah.
But it would just be, you know, to take away that pressure of heat and travel, to be able to, you know, to remove those restrictions.
And you'd also be you'd be extremely rich, I would think.
I'm rich in soul anyway, Jason.
You are.
So it's a little bit of a, I don't know, it's not really a cop-out answer, I guess, but it's, I don't know at the moment where those things will never be the same again. You know, they've taken energy away from us. They've ruined California.
Yeah.
And
am I right in thinking that, as I'm not a scientist, nuclear fusion is similar to the process that the sun uses to create energy, or am I off track there?
Oh, I don't know what the sun does. You've thrown that one at me on my second beer in the afternoon.
I was just reading an article about it the other day, and it mentioned something about that, because I was curious to how the sun, you'd think it's burning all that fire. How come it doesn't run out of energy? If it, you know, they talk
there's
about
a lot of it, and it will do in about
billions
billions
of years, and it's burning. You come up with these numbers like it's burning as much energy in a second as it would take to power the Earth for so many years, and the numbers are always just quite staggering, aren't they? It's difficult to get your head around.
And when the sun burns out, and then like some scientists say it will kind of implode, and others say the gravitational pull will make it explode, who knows, then the whole solar system will go, not just Earth. So Elon Musk and his trip to Mars is a nice start, but looking down the line, humanity, we got no chance anyway.
No.
Although there was a very interesting podcast there's the physicist in America, and I don't know his name. He was on Joe Rogan, but he looks at like beyond quantum energy and how UFOs may exist. Because, you know, UFOs are quite high profile again. Because there's stuff that the American military are now saying, it's not ours. They're not saying it doesn't exist. They're saying it's not ours. And these things are doing, performing moves that would have, you know, relating to Top Gun, they're having 1,000 G or 10,000 G would be affected by the moves.
Yeah, I saw that video. It's quite fascinating. So,
and he talks about like the three stages of energy development and how, like, at the very, very subatomic level, there is energy in there that's hundreds of thousands and billions of times what we are aware of.
Yeah.
And how you can warp time and space, and about how perhaps these things aren't even man's. They are, you know, it's really interesting. It sounds like complete crazy talk, but this guy is talking about what humanity might be doing in 1,000 years, 100,000 years, 10,000 years, based on the potential of subatomic physics, and how you might be able to store an identity into a craft and travel kind of, you know, virtually in this ship through wormholes or whatever. Stuff that we have absolutely no concept about.
No, it's
but theoretical physics.
It's almost
says it's possible.
Beyond one's comprehension, isn't it? So
it is.
Yeah, that's
bit like,
really
bit like the fact that Doctor Who ever got made. Yeah.
Well, the program that must not be mentioned.
Yeah, that's the other thing I'd do in 1960. I'd stop the BBC from ever commissioning Doctor Who.
Oh, I think there's a few guys that won't be happy about you saying this. Remember that my podcast fans are time travel fans. So
I know.
Okay.
No, I used to watch it when I was a kid. Yeah. You know, I only joke about it because it gets brought up on occasion.
It does.
On some of your future, hopefully your future guests.
Indeed.
Will no doubt discuss it with you.
They no doubt will. Right. Well, you know, that's been absolutely fascinating having you on today. Thank you for coming along. Plenty of food for thought there. Anything else you want to say just before we go? I think we've got about a minute
not
left.
Really. Okay. Not really. Just, I mean, most I suspect people who will listen to this are people who are on the same
they
path
will be,
that we
I'm
are.
Sure. They,
so
I'm sure they will.
Stay strong, everyone.
Yeah.
Do not comply. And enjoy yourselves whilst you can. It all goes in a minute.
Definitely got to enjoy ourselves while we can.
Yeah.
Okay.
And hopefully see you soon, mate, at one of the third Wednesdays.
Definitely. Thank you. So just before I do sign off, just to say, if you want to follow us we're on YouTube, we're on Apple and Google and all these other places. And the episodes go out on a weekly basis on Thursdays around 8 p.m. So look out for us then. That's it for today. So thank you, Dave.
Cheers, Jason. See you soon, mate.
And goodbye.